Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and on this week's episode, we're bringing you our 25-26 season predictions with title winners, relegation candidates, flops of the season, and our surprise packages. That's all on today's episode of Unseen Incidents. So we're back for another edition. I didn't even tell anyone that we were going to be late last week. I was just like, I don't tweet about it anymore. It's fine. Like, it appears in your inbox. People are chill about it. Like, who cares what the dates are? And last week, it was just like, it was my birthday. I was like, I don't have time to do this fucking, like, revision, basically. And actually, also, I think it's worked out for us. Because delaying an extra week means that now Premier League season is literally about to start. I'm also away next week. So, Pete Dorman, good to see you. Are you prepared for what is probably going to be like a four-hour podcast recording today?
Well, I mean, you say that you didn't have the time to do it last week. I think you actually did have the time. You just didn't have the will to do it, which I think is completely fair enough on your birthday weekend. Or your birthday week, sorry.
Well, it depends how you look at it, right? Like, yes, did I technically have the time?
Yes.
Yes, I did. Did I have the time after I took out all the time that I wanted to spend on my birthday? No. I didn't have that time. So I was kind of like, you know what? I'm going to go and have a Guinness on my birthday at the pub.
Oh, yeah, you sent me a picture. Actually, you didn't send me a picture. You sent the world a picture, but tagged me. Yeah.
Did you like that I took a tiny little sip out of the top?
Did you mention, like, fuck your Guinness challenge as well in that? Or is that something I'm making?
No, I was just like, I wanted a little sip. And, you know, just to start, I just wanted a little sip just to taste. And I find that whole split, I find all that stuff incredibly try hard. Like, anything where it's like, no, you've got to do it this way, it's like, you know, the way that whenever you have like scones, some boring fuck will be like, oh, do you put your jam on or your cream on first? It's just like, no one gives, I don't know, I don't even think about it because it's beneath my notice. It's like not important enough for me to think about. And same with the Guinness, I was just like, my dad isn't standing here watching me drink this Guinness trying to decide if I'm a man and whether I'm worthy of his bloodline. Like, I'm just going to fucking drink this Guinness however I want. It also seems like a really big chunk of the Guinness to drink like straight away. If you're planning to drink a load of them, then maybe it's fine. But I was planning to have one, maybe two.
This is
two,
one of the theories.
So I was like, I'm going to enjoy it.
It's one of the theories that if you can incentivize people to drink quicker, you obviously sell more of your product. And sure. I honestly, I don't know if Guinness... Well,
famously a problem in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. And Guinness...
How do we get people to drink?
Famously good innovators as well, the people at Guinness.
Okay, so this was their next thing. They were like, we think that we can create social pressure for people to down their Guinnesses.
Yeah, literally the first drink they take has to be like 25% of the pint.
I mean, yeah, it's when you look at it, every time I look at the glass,
incredible,
I'm like,
social marketing.
That's a fucking lot. Like, that's a lot to do in one go. And you can do it because, look, it's 500 and it's what? It's 568 mil in a pint.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you can down the whole thing in one go. Like, it's not that. When I drink water, I drink that much in one go. That's normal. But like, why the fuck would I do that with a pint?
When you think about it as a marketing technique, it's actually fantastic because once you do it, whether you pass or fail, you cannot do it again until you have a new drink.
Sure.
Like, you can't redo the Guinness challenge.
So if you fuck
it,
then you're like,
you're just waiting for
one.
Your next pint. Yeah.
That's good.
Incentivizing purchasing more.
I wonder if like buying a round is the same thing. Like, buying a round feels like a very similar kind of like guerrilla marketing scheme where it's like, no, you go up and buy a round. And of course, there are practical reasons. One person goes and orders. But in practice, what it means is if there are like eight people,
you have to stay for eight drinks.
Then there's a slow social pressure to stay for eight drinks. Whereas if you go buy your own drink, if you go buy your own drink, then you're just like, well, I'm done now. Like, so I'm going to go home. It feels like the buying a round thing is totally a, how can we get people to buy seven more drinks than they otherwise would?
Yeah. I mean, well, what I found outside of social pressure was that there's a great allure or draw to good Guinness. So we unexpectedly, half the team were on a shoot. So the other half, they wanted to go to Wetherspoons for lunch on Thursday. And I was like, I'm not fucking going to Wetherspoons.
When am I going to have gammon?
I eventually was pressured in. We have a new person who started at work on my team, so I was like, right, fuck. Kind of feel like I have to.
Must be a woman, eh?
go. No, it was a man. It's a man. It was a man.
No,
a man.
Really?
Yeah.
Shocking.
But I went and we had lunch outside a Wetherspoons near kind of like Tarbridge area. And I was like, this is fucking dire. And this pint of Guinness is dire.
I'm sorry, what? You had lunch outside. You had lunch on terrace outside of Wetherspoons.
Yeah.
You had like an alfresco lunch, but at Wetherspoons.
I wasn't going in the establishment. I stayed fully outside. So that was my compromise. And it was a nice day. But Christ. This is literally three streets around the corner from Feeney's, which is famously, for London, good Guinness. And just me discussing that at the table somehow prompted like a mini bar crawl halfway through the day.
Sure.
In that I was like, right, we'll have a drink here. Then we'll go to Feeney's and you'll actually get a good Guinness. And we might stay there for two drinks and then we'll come back to work.
It feels like you should have just gone to Feeney's, got a pint, brought it back to Wetherspoons. Because when you're drinking outside, no one knows that you're still there. You just leave.
Yeah, but you could take one look at it and be like, we didn't pour that. We know we didn't pour that.
They're not going to do that at Wetherspoons. Do you think anyone at Wetherspoons hang on, we need to go and check that nobody's stealing from Wetherspoons? No one gives a fuck.
I'm not saying they're going to do that, but I'm saying there would be significant markers as to it not being poured on site.
No, but does a marker exist if there's no one to mark it? Like, if nobody at Wetherspoons cares...
Well, yeah, it's a tree in the woods, right?
Like, you could literally say to the staff at Wetherspoons, I just went and got this from another pub, and they'd be like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter.
But it's the same as, like something making a sound when nobody's there to hear it. It still makes a sound, right?
Yeah, but I mean, this is about it signalling something specific to a person. It's not just about, like, whether sounds exist.
No, but this is whether good pints and bad pints exist, which they absolutely do.
Okay, well, look, it's actually appropriate we're talking about this, because you came to my birthday party, and Emma had arranged a little surprise where she wanted everyone to give, like, a two-minute presentation on a topic of their choosing, because she thought that I would enjoy this, and I actually loved it. It was great. People were talking about some really rogue shit.
She did request it to be, like, the nicher the better.
But yours was excellent, but arguably the lazy choice, because you did do Guinness, which required
I did a very specific
approximately
pint of Guinness.
Zero preparation.
Well, yeah, that is the ideal presentation.
Deny that. Wait, I don't deny
you say that. You say
that.
You say zero
afterwards, I was just
Patrick.
Like, I don't want to give Pete too much credit. I was like, look, Pete,
no notes.
And my friend Annie, who talked about seasons 7 to 10 of The Real Housewives of New York,
we started watching.
Sure.
By the way.
Like, I was like, you two are the ones who, if I asked you questions about this for the next hour, I don't think that I would exhaust your knowledge on this subject. But you're also the ones who, like, if you'd got no notice that this was happening at the party, you'd just walked in and been told you had to give a two-minute presentation. You could have delivered those exactly as they were with no issues whatsoever.
But my argument here is that it's not a lack of preparation, it's a lifetime of preparation.
That's interesting.
I've always been ready for that moment.
That's a very solid argument. Yeah, when you hire someone to do a job, and you know, like when you see those people who are like, this graphic designer only took an hour and a half to make this logo and I paid him $1,000, and you're like, yeah, but he had to become skilled in order to do it in an hour and a half. So that's your argument, is it? That because you've devoted more than 1,000 hours to your, or whatever it is, 10,000 hours.
And also, I opened my presentation by saying that it was the first time I'd ever gone to a party where I'd been given homework. Mm-hmm. And much like my entire approach through my 7 years in tertiary education, I have arrived criminally underprepared.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But it all works out fine in the end.
But Pete, I'm familiar with this. Oh, I haven't actually prepared, like, fucking bullshit. I invented that shit. Like, so it doesn't wash with me. But look, it was good. It went well. And actually, I should tell you this. It's my mum's birthday next week. And I was just like, what should I get her? And as I've mentioned on this podcast several times, my mum does actually love Guinness. My mum got prescribed Guinness when she was anemic, when she was like in her early 20s. Like, she went and saw the doctor and the doctor was like, you need more iron.
Just drink it. I mean,
he said, drink a Guinness every couple of days. And my mum was like, all right. And she doesn't drink it every couple of days. Yeah. But at Christmas, she would always get Guinness in. And that was how I first enjoyed Guinness, like drinking it with my mum. So I was like, you know what I'm going to get her for her fucking 69th birthday? I'm going to get her a Guinness Nitro Surge.
Are you?
And a crate of Nitro Surge, yeah. Which is fucking expensive.
They're not
cheap.
They're like £2. They're £20 for a crate of 10.
But I think it'll be fun. And then I'll get some in next week because my mum's coming down. So I'll get some in next week and she and I can have a Guinness together. But I thought that you would approve of...
Oh, I do.
Because bearing in mind as well, my mum's like... I think she's probably down to like 5'3" now, 5'2". Like, she'll have a couple of Guinnesses.
Can I give you some advice
rocking.
On the nitro surges?
Okay.
So always clean glass, fresh glass between different pints if possible.
Okay, fine.
If your fridge is a particularly cold fridge, take it out and let it sit at room temperature for like 10 minutes before pouring it. Because if it's too cold, it doesn't go as creamy.
Got you. Okay. Good
to know. Those are my takeaways from 1,000 hours of nitro surge.
That must apply to stuff like, you know, minor figures do like cold brew cans and shit, where there's a similar nitro effect.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if those tips apply, because I remember getting one of those a while ago and I was like, is there a way to put this through the nitro surge apparatus to create a creamier coffee? But in the end, I was just like, this is going to end up with like oat milk festering inside my nitro surge. So I just left it. But anyway, it's an interesting question. Look, should we get into the podcast? Because we've got a fucking load of football shit to talk about. So on this first episode, on the public episode, we're going to talk about our relegation picks and our title winners. Then we'll do the burn book. And then over on the paid side, we will talk about our flops and surprises of the season. Title, I think you and I are in agreement on this. But like, it's an incredibly difficult thing to choose. Like, okay, I might start this.
Sure.
Because I think you've got more stats and stuff than me, and I'm kind of like a bit vibey on this one. I've gone for Arsenal, and I always get accusations of bias when I do this, but I do hate picking Arsenal to win things. Yeah. It's just that they've been really good recently, you know? Like, that's the problem. And I think that like they are actually the safe pick here. Like, not because they're going to do it, because they're up against...
No, I agree with this.
It's a three-way title, and I think...
I don't even think it's three-way.
Okay. I mean, City had quite a strong second half of last season, and I don't know.
I just don't love their moves in the market.
Yeah, but nor do I, but I wouldn't be surprised if 6 weeks into the season, I'm just like, oh, it's fine. Oh, they've just worked it out. It's fine. But it's a three-way title race. You know, Ted was telling me the other day that his model likes City versus the field. So as in... City over everyone else put together, it thinks. And I was like, Ted, your model's fucking cooked. That's rubbish. But betting markets, and also I was looking at ESPN's prediction and BBC's predictions and all this, and overwhelmingly, it's like two-thirds of people going for Liverpool. And that is too strong. I don't think any of these teams should be over 50%, certainly not near two-thirds. But more importantly, I just think the stability choice here is Arsenal.
I agree.
Like, Man City... Lots of questions. Completely redone their midfield. Rodri coming back off ACL. De Bruyne gone. Maybe they can work it out. Maybe they can't. I still worry about how they defend in transition. Liverpool, okay, now they're going for Mark Gahey. I think that's really, really needed. But
plus one more.
The way they were against Palace in the Community Shield is exactly the worry that we've had about Liverpool, which is, can they stop counters? Can they defend with this group of guys? Yeah. Like, Van Dijk is a year older. Konate is very injury prone. The fullbacks are not defensive fullbacks, really, Kerkez and Frimpong. So it feels like it needs a change shape. Now, don't get me wrong, they're going to absolutely annihilate some teams. Like, I would not be surprised if Liverpool beat like Burnley 10-0 this season. I really wouldn't.
Like, they could produce one of the biggest scorelines in Premier League history comfortably.
I think that their XG4 will be hilarious. But I still think, you know, even if Gay comes in and is good, he's not going to be as good, I think, as like Van Dijk and Konate were together last season, which was staggering. Gravenberch, like, I know that we like him. He's good, but he's not like a superstar defender in the midfield.
Nope.
So it still feels light defensively. Now, obviously, they could go and do more stuff. But from Arsenal's point of view, there's no change here. Like, Arsenal are going to run out exactly the same thing this season as last season. Michael Cayley was talking about this on the Double Pivot podcast, but he was like, when I factored in red cards, Arsenal's numbers were as good over the first half of last season as Liverpool's. In fact, they were slightly better. And I look at that and I think Arsenal are going to do the same thing, but with Zubimendi in midfield.
Yeah.
And the defense is still going to be elite. Like, I have no doubts about the defense. And in the attack, which was the problem last season, there are reasons to be positive, because obviously last season you had Ødegaard and Saka out for big periods. You had half the season with no striker. Havertz and Jesus, and also the attacking fullbacks were out as well. Most of the season it was Timber, Lewis, Skelly. Calafiori and White are the attacking fullbacks. So you actually had a ton of ways that Arsenal attack out of play. And now, don't get me wrong as well, like, you know, Arteta, I think, is he is too conservative. He needs to open the taps this season. But I look at that and I think, do I think that White and Calafiori are going to spend most of the year out again? Calafiori maybe, but like, not both of them.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get injuries, sure, but Jokeres coming in makes it way less likely that all their strikers can get injured. Adding Madueke means that they've gone from their third and fourth wingers being Trossard and Nwaneri to the backup wingers probably being Martinelli and Nwaneri, which is pretty good. That's assuming they sell Trossard and don't sign anyone else, which they still might
do. Do you
think
Madueke starts on the left?
I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up just being,
I think it's
like
one of him or Martinelli, basically, yeah.
But more importantly, like, Madueke,
back up to Saka.
More importantly, I think that, like, there's fan disappointment around these signings a little bit, right? Because we don't really
I find the Madueke response strange.
Well, and I'd say Arsenal fans, like the average Arsenal fan, is really high on Jokeres and really low on Madueke. Yeah. And I would say that everybody I kind of respect is really high on Madueke and quite low on Jokeres. But I think that the dissatisfaction here is kind of that, like, if Arsenal had got a Leao or a Rodrigo or someone, then it would feel like a massive ceiling raiser, you know? Now, don't get me wrong, I think Leao, you know, would cause problems too. But, like, those players could just push this Arsenal team into the stratosphere. Madueke and Jokeres don't do that. But I do think they help with the stuff that Arsenal were bad at last season.
Yes.
Like, so Arsenal, that's one thing. Like, now you've gone to having first team quality depth.
Yes.
You know, like, if you have Martinelli on the bench, that is a very good situation for Arsenal to be in. If you have Havertz on the bench, that's a very good situation for Arsenal to be in. That makes things considerably less worrying. Yeah. But also,
I look Norgaard on the bench with Zubimendi and Rice in a more advanced role that he looks super dangerous in.
And Mosquera. Yeah, sure.
And Mosquera, yeah.
But I think that
Kepa as well on the bench.
It's more about the style of games Arsenal struggle in. Like, the style of games Arsenal struggle in, Arsenal and Liverpool have kind of switched places. In the old days, it always felt like Liverpool would get up for a big game, but would then maybe, you know, mess up in smaller games. This is like 10 years ago. And then Arsenal would batter the small teams. Like, even late Wenger, they would just crush the small teams, but they were just total powder puff against anyone good. Now, again, Liverpool aren't going to be that bad, like as bad as late Wenger defensively. But you look at this Liverpool team now, and I think they're going to crush everyone they're better than. The question is, what happens when they come up against a really good team that can break through the middle? With this Arsenal team, I feel like they've almost been built to be good in the big games. And actually, they can be really toothless in the smaller games. When they play a disciplined, deep or mid block, they just look fucking boring and pedestrian. And actually, I think that Madueke really helps with that.
Yeah.
You know, like,
but so does Jokeres as well.
You don't get Martinelli isolated wide. You get Madueke doing it, who's totally happy there. And the problem is when Martinelli's isolated wide, and then you've got Rice in the left eight, who's not an attacking passer, and Saka has like two guys on him, and then you've got someone like Havertz, who's a little bit more stationary in the middle. Like, those are when you really need Gabriel Jesus, because he can dribble and create and make things kind of come alive. Well, Jokeres isn't a dribbler like Gabriel Jesus. But in terms of pulling out wide, ball carrying and creating, he actually does do that. And Madueke is a big volume dribbler and carrier. And so that gives you something in those matches that Arsenal are specifically bad at. Calafiori too. If Calafiori is fit, he's this chaos agent in the final third. Like, Calafiori is like Darwin Nunez playing left back. Like, he is incredibly direct, kind of insane, but honestly, physically unstoppable. Having him as a runner in a game where Arsenal need a goal or where you're facing a deep block is a serious weapon. So I think that those are going to help. Now, it's not going to do everything. I do think Arsenal need a supplementary creator. They need cover for Odegaard. Like, maybe you'll see some Dalman minutes this season, but Dalman's 15. Like, in one area, people talk about him playing as attacking midfielder. I'm sorry, but like, he does nothing that an attacking midfielder does right now. He shoots and he dribbles. He's really good at both those things, but those are not attacking midfielder traits. So I kind of think, yes, Arsenal need that devastating extra attacking passer. Like, the Eze interest makes sense to me there, because that's your left wing and your attacking passer combined. And I think somebody needs to start shooting from about 20 yards out. I've talked about this
a
lot.
But also, if Rice is able to push up, he can be that guy.
Well, hopefully, or just anyone, even if it's Odegaard, like, just anyone needs to do it. Like, you look at, Arsenal had more goals from outside the box last season than Liverpool. They had 8 and Liverpool had 6. But Liverpool had 22 more shots from outside the box, and City had 75 more shots from outside the box than Arsenal. So I do think that it just shakes things up if somebody's willing to have a crack from out there. And Arsenal, with this Arsenal team, like, it has got to the point where you're like, we kind of know what they want to do. And if we can stop him doing it, or if Saka's not on the pitch, because Saka was great. Like, that's the other thing. With Saka getting injured, it kind of went unreported how insane he was. Mm. He got 16 goal involvements, 15 non-penalty goal involvements in 1,700 minutes last season. Like, yeah. That is staggering.
What was that, 15 goal involvements?
In 15 non-penalty goal involvements in 1,700 minutes. He was at like 0.7 expected goals and assists per 90, as well as doing loads of ball carrying and dribbling and stuff. Like, yeah, he was absolutely out of his mind.
So if you get a full 3,500 minutes, that's 31 goal involvement.
I mean, sure.
No, I know, I'm saying that's the rate he was operating at.
How are you working that out? Are you working out by I would work it out by 0.7 per 90, which I think shakes out.
Well,
I'd assume
I
he gets 30, 15, 32.
15 divided by 1,700 times 3,500.
Sure. But I think he's more likely to play, like, say, 32 90s.
Sure.
And I'd go by the 0.7 expected goals and assists. So then you probably get something like in the 21, 22 range. But that's still a big uptick. And I just think that the story for things going wrong for City is the guys they've signed are exactly the problem we think they are defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And City can't fix the defense, or Rodri comes back at 75%, you know? Like, that's the story for City not being amazing. Or they really miss De Bruyne, and Cherki isn't quite as good as they want him to be. Like, these are all possibilities. The Liverpool case is like, maybe Van Dijk is a bit older. Maybe Konate gets injured. Maybe the fullbacks they've signed are exactly who we think they are defensively. You know, like,
maybe Salah doesn't score at a historic rate.
I don't know. I just think the attack is going to be good. Like, there's no way around it. Like,
there's a lot of goals to make up for if you don't have Salah's output as good as it was last season.
I kind of think that if Salah got injured for the entire season, Liverpool's attack would still be basically on par with, like, Arsenal's. Like, I really do. Like, their attack is so fucking good. But, like,
They do have some very high-profile young new players in that.
But my point is, there are lots and lots of things, none of which are particularly unlikely, which could cause problems for Liverpool's title challenge. Even if everything is great, but it just takes a couple of months of the season for everything to gel, even that takes you away from the 90-point range. Whereas from Arsenal's point of view, like, Arsenal could definitely mess things up. You know, it might just not work somehow. But broadly speaking, the worst case scenario for Arsenal is, like, they're the same as they were last season. And if they're the same as they were last season with better injury health, then they'd still be in the hunt. So really what we're saying is Arsenal need to be as injured as they were last season for them to be totally out of the title race.
Yeah.
You know? And from that point of view, like, I don't really give them the edge here. Like, I basically put all these teams at a third. I want to put Arsenal, I'd maybe put, like, City at 30% and Liverpool and Arsenal at 35 each. You know, maybe I'd go that way, because I do just think there are more questions. I just don't trust City at all. But
I don't trust them at all.
But I think when I look at the amount of work that Liverpool have done, they are rebuilding the squad this summer.
Yeah.
They've
Which
decided
is weird
to
say
it.
Of a title-winning team, like a defending champion.
But I think, but we were kind of like, right, okay, well, they want to maximise their chance of winning something with Salah and Van Dijk, and they've still got a very good chance of winning things with Salah and Van Dijk.
They're kind of doing both in the same time.
But yeah, I wonder if they also thought, well, Salah and Van Dijk can hold everything together.
Everybody they bought is like under 24. Like,
yeah, while we turn things over.
Unknown variables here.
Sure.
Like, I fully agree with literally everything you said in that Arsenal are the safe bet here. And there is a chance that Liverpool can just go supernova. And that,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, like Salah, Wirtz, Ekitike just blow the league out of the water.
I wouldn't bet on Arsenal to win the league at all. Like, if I could bet on one of these, I reckon I'd probably get the best odds on City and I'd be inclined to take a punt on that. But I wouldn't put money, like, I think putting money on Arsenal or Liverpool to win the title this season is like a losing bet.
I think that's kind of the same as betting on the third favourite in anything. You know, like as long as it's feasible, you're going to get the best odds, and like City are, in my opinion, the third favourite.
But that's kind of my point. Like, I'm just saying that, like,
yeah.
When I say Arsenal to win the title here, it's because I have to pick someone.
Sure.
But realistically, like, Liverpool being amazing is completely on the cards.
But I also think Liverpool being not very good for large portions of the season, particularly at the very start of the season, is also very much on the cards because they are going through a huge rebuild. They've brought in a load of fantastic players for loads of money. And I guess some of this kind of depends on whether they get Isak or not. But as it stands, our squad is fantastic but young / old. And there's not a huge amount in the middle. It depends how all these new young players gel. It depends how much more you can squeeze out of Salah and Van Dijk. It depends how Liverpool and Slot kind of come into the season now with genuine expectations of winning it. You're saying people are giving them over 66% chance of winning a title in terms of predictions. Optus supercomputer has them at like 30%. You know, they are coming in as genuine title favourites, whereas like they enjoyed a little bit of the pressure was lifted on last season because nobody knew quite what they'd be under Slot. Nobody expected them to win the title. At least they weren't the favourites. And this season's completely different. This season they have the pressure to recreate what they did last season. They're older players are a year older, the younger players are brand new. There's a lot that can just go wrong. There's a lot that can just take a little bit of time to gel together. City, I don't like what they've done in the market.
No.
They are still quite reliant on a couple of big players that we've seen. If they get injured or if they lose a bit of form, what happens next is a bit of a question mark. Less so now, but it is still a bit of a question mark. I get concerns that Pep's kind of looking like he's starting to burn out again. He doesn't seem like he's got the same passion as he did three seasons ago. We knew, like, he's a manager that has historically spent the time at a club, burned out, and then left. You know, it feels like we're getting that stage of Pep at City now. Don't like the signings. The one I don't mind is Cherky.
Sure.
But he's a risk in himself. You know, obviously the...
Well, and if they got Rodrigo...
Not a monetary risk, but like you don't really know what you're getting with Cherky.
And if they got Rodrigo as well, like I think that would be great. Except though, I don't really know how they sell it to him, given that he's like, I want to play left wing. And they're like, well, we've got Marmoush who plays there.
Yeah.
So like, what are they... Is Rodrigo just going to end up playing on the right for them? I don't really know what the plan is there. But like, I certainly don't know what Foden's career looks like.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I look at them and I think, hang on, are the fullbacks here Mateus Nunes and Ryan Aitnuri? Because I don't think that's that good.
Yeah.
in all honesty.
With City, there are too many unknowns in that squad. And I just think that for me, they are the third favourites in this by a distance. Not a huge distance, but like a read. They're better than everybody else in the league, bar Arsenal and Liverpool, who are, in my opinion, a bit of a stretch ahead of them. And Arsenal are just the safe bet. They have been a work in progress for the better part of a decade under Arteta. Finished second three seasons in a row. Probably should have won the Champions League last year. They had significant issues injury-wise last year, which you wouldn't expect them to suffer the same way.
Mm.
They had holes in their squad, which they have filled most of. Zubimendi, great fill. Madueke helps a ton. Gyökeres, even if he's not going to score anywhere near the rate he scored at in Portugal, but just him being there and scoring at a half-decent rate occupies defences way more than, say, Havertz would. And I guess if he is somewhat effective, it makes it far more difficult to double up on Saka because you kind of need to pick your poison. Do we give Gyökeres space running through in the middle or do we commit more to Saka? And then overall, you're just a more well-developed, well-rounded team, more robust to go a full season. Even if they do pick up a couple of injuries, Odegaard is probably the one outlier here. If they pick up a couple of injuries somewhere, the squad is better fitted to deal with that, to not drop off substantially. And it just feels like there will be chaos at City and Liverpool at some point this season. Arsenal just kind of feel like this slow and steady team that if they can manage their way through, you know, just dispatching the little teams and get their game plan right in the big games and the six-pointers, they just kind of like slow and steady their way to the Premier League title.
Yeah, they were in a competitive Champions League semi-final last season,
yeah,
with Marino playing up front, with Gabriel out, with Saka coming back from an injury. Like, I mean, it was just... Like this is exactly what we're talking about, the stability, right? Which is that, like, I think a lot of us thought if one of the centre-backs goes down, it's going to be a huge problem. And Kivior came in and Arsenal just looked fine. Like,
yeah.
They just looked fine. And when I think about Man City or Liverpool in that same situation, I do not have the same degree of confidence. I think if Salah got injured, I think Liverpool could deal with it.
Yeah.
I think if Van Dijk got injured, like for like a third of the season, that is a huge fucking problem. Like,
well, yeah,
that is a
you'll
big,
end up with
Gehi
and Konate and nobody else, basically.
Yeah, and Gehi and Konate, like, you know, they're both good, but like...
It's just not robust.
They're not magical. And yeah, and then who's behind them? It's like this guy they're trying to sign from Parma.
Yeah. And they're also going to have to play like 3,000 minutes.
And then in midfield as well, you're kind of like, okay, so the midfield is like Gravenberch, and they're going to try and play Szoboszlai like in a double pivot. Like, I don't really know. And they don't really have the option of going to a back three because they don't have enough
centre backs.
So again, like when we're saying this here, we're not just saying like Liverpool got no shot, City have got no shot, but it's just that shit happening to Liverpool and to City feels much more likely than shit happening to Arsenal.
I fully agree.
Where the only shit that can happen to Arsenal to completely knock them out of the race is either something like insane goes wrong with them tactically, like literally insane, or they get insane injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the other teams, it's just far easier to tell the disaster story.
Yeah, I agree. I do think the one thing stopping Arsenal winning the league this season is just Liverpool just finding their feet quick enough for them to go supernova and just blow. If they can find their feet quick enough and go remotely supernova, they blow this league out of the fucking water.
Well, it's not just that though. It's like,
even if they can see two goals a game, they'll score four.
Yeah.
Like I just think that attack, if Vertz hits the ground running, and if Ekotike,
do we think they'll be better than like
a reasonable rate plus Salah?
Do we think they'll be better than like every City team's attack? Because like that's kind of how good you've got to be. Like it would have to be the best attack we've ever seen in the Premier League, I feel. Like to fade a defense if shit went wrong with the defense. Like as in Liverpool could go supernova, but that still wouldn't stop the fact that something going wrong with the defense would be an enormous problem, right? They need to go supernova and get some luck. Because they've been a much older squad like the last couple of years. You know, like they really built a young squad early on with Klopp. And then last season they were aging, and that's one of the reasons it was so surprising that they were fit all season, because they were relying on so many older players. I think it's totally possible that they just blitz teams or just that, you know, the attack bails them out of games where like...
I think that's the kicker here.
Yeah, it's totally possible. Like Van Dijk has like a shitty game and they do give up two or three goals and they score five. Like that's completely possible. But to me, that one of the other factors is the Champions League, which is that if one of these teams goes out of the Champions League early, that will be very interesting. You know,
you're still like, I think minimum to go
they out. Will go hard. I wouldn't be surprised also, by the way, if after the first 6 weeks of the season, we're being told that somebody's out of the title race, because Arsenal have a tough start and Liverpool have a tough start. And I think if Arsenal have like a start where they get like 10, 11 points from 18 over the first six games, people would be like, they're out of it. But I think that this season, okay, you've always had these ups and downs in fixture difficulty. And actually you can predict the headlines based on this.
Yeah.
But also I think now with the Champions League and so many more games, like I think that stuff becomes even more of a factor. So I think that, you know, there are definitely going to be points where people will struggle because of the Champions League. And if one of these teams gets to, say, the quarterfinals of the Champions League and they see their draw ahead of them and it's kind of easy. Like, so let's say Liverpool get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League and they're looking ahead of them and it's one of those situations, you know, where you're like, oh, we've got Porto and then we've got, you know, Atletico Madrid. And then in the final, we've got like maybe an Italian team or maybe just a really good team. But like maybe Barcelona is someone who's really good, but has a weakness that we feel we can exploit. Like, I think then they'll say, I think we got to go for it, especially if the league is really, really tight. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Champions League is a real deciding factor in this as well, because you can't split your resources that much. And these teams, Arsenal and...
Oh, but Arsenal can put their resources in most of any of these two teams.
Arsenal have clearly decided, rather than getting absolute superstars, we're going to make sure that every single player in our kind of 24, 25-man squad is like a Premier League first team quality player.
The only real hole is Odegaard.
Which is interesting to see.
That's literally the only hole in that squad.
Which is very interesting to see them do that. And we'll see how it works out. But Arsenal are probably best suited to do that. but it's fucking rare to win the Premier League and the Champions League in the same season. Like, yeah. It's really fucking hard to do. Okay, well, look, I think we're agreed on this.
Yeah.
You know, I do think Liverpool are going to be absolutely insane, but
it could literally be either one of those three. Like,
but the question is, what happens when they come up against a team that's just like, we can hold you? Because if Salah does slow down a little bit, then it becomes much easier to see teams shutting them out. Like, it's still going to be hard, but you're kind of like, okay, well, then we've got to lock down Wirtz because Salah is now 70% of what he was. Like, I mean, I find that unlikely. I still think he's going to be excellent, but it's possible. But what happens when they're up against a disciplined team that can keep them out defensively and then can just like run up the gut really, really fast, which is what we saw with Palace. Yeah. There are now so many teams in the Premier League who are built to do that it will be absolutely fascinating to see how that goes. You know, all it takes is one centre-back to just have the game of his life, or a keeper to have the game of his life.
Yeah.
And your attack gets shut out, and then you're in real, real trouble with, you know, like Spurs. You could come up against Spurs and like Vicario and Van de Ven could just be like out of this fucking world on that day, which is really not that crazy. Like, Van de Ven is amazing. And then they might have Eze, Savio and Kudus all running at you. And
yeah,
you think, oh, fuck, like, what do we do about this? Should we go on to our relegation candidates then? Because we've gone quite long on this. Which ones do we agree with on this?
Do you want to give me your three and I'll give you my three?
Hands down, with a bullet, Burnley.
Agree.
My most locked pick.
Oh, that was my least locked pick. My most locked pick is Sunderland.
Okay, well, Burnley, I think Burnley are building a team for the Championship. Like, and I don't mean that as a criticism. I think they're doing what Ipswich did last year. They're like, we need to have no financial albatrosses. We need to build a team that can come up next year. That's totally fine. They got promoted off a massive goalkeeping overperformance. They lost that goalkeeper who gave them that. I don't see it happening at all. Sunderland, make your case for Sunderland. Because I actually...
I honestly think Sunderland are destined for bottom place. Like,
a lot of people feel that way. Okay, so everyone at the transfer flow feels that way. And I want to believe in Sunderland.
Okay, so
I like their signings, man.
I think their signings are
mostly
decent, okay? But I just can't escape the fact that they really rode their luck last year. They rode their luck in the playoff final. They were the absolute second best team by a country mile. It kind of stinks of Luton, the way they got promoted. They were just a championship squad that got lucky at the right moments, or were in the right place at the right moments, managed to get through the playoff finals and find themselves in the Premier League. They have added some decent players. You know, they spent like 100 million, over 100 million quid on like a load of 15 to 25 million pound players.
Which I think are all also smart players because they'll be fine in the Championship
like,
or Zaka in the Premier League.
There's a load of smart additions there, and their squad is better than it was last season. But their squad last season was just a pure, like, unadulterated championship quality team last year. They finished fourth, but they were 14 points back on Sheffield in third, 24 back on Leeds and Burnley, who finished on 100 points. Under that, they had the 8th best expected goal difference per 90 at just plus 0.2, 9th for goals and expected goals, 4th for goals against and 5th for expected goals against. We have seen two seasons now where the three championship teams promoted gone straight back down. And all of those championship teams were better than Sunderland or last season.
Okay. Can I make my counter argument?
Okay.
So I think you're right about all of this.
Okay.
And honestly, I think there's quite a good chance that Sunderland finished 20th.
Yeah.
I really do. But...
Are you going to say like Dare to Dream or something?
Yeah. Okay. It's more that when I look at other teams, I'm just like, well, I don't trust these fuckers either. Like, that's it. Okay. So Sunderland, I think I at least see the vision, you know, with the guys they've signed. And there are players there who I think are going to be dangerous and troublesome for Premier League sides. My biggest issue with Sunderland is that they play quite a defensive style. And I think, you know, as shown by the fact that they were using Enzo Lefebvre on the wing, like, that is a defensive thing to do. They're not going to have very much of the ball because it's the Premier League.
Yeah.
And they're sticking with the defenders that brought them up, pretty much. Like, most of their signings, right, are midfielders and attackers. And so then you think, okay, so we're going with the defense we had last season and we expect to be defending a lot. That's very concerning. So yeah, the problem is I had five teams here who I was like, these teams should all be relegated. And in the end, I decided to like leave West Ham out of it.
I left West Ham out of it. I think they're fine.
Because I think, you know, Potter, Somerville, Bowen, Paquetá, sure. Though I do think Potter is a very good sack race candidate.
Ooh,
so then the question is like Leeds, Wolves and Sunderland. And when I look at Leeds, I'm just totally unconvinced as well, because like Leeds battered the championship last season. But look at the players they did it with. They did it with guys like Manus Solomon and Daniel James hitting like 0.7 expected goals and assists per 90. Manus Solomon's not going back. And also, even if he did, like Solomon and Daniel James, you're like, these are players who we know are not really very good Premier League players. So that's the hope, that they're three guys who got over 20 goal involvements last season, James, Solomon and Pirou. Like that they're gonna do it this season. Yeah, but
James is still good enough to be a Premier League player. He doesn't have to have that level goal involvement for them to finish 16th.
Yeah, but one of these has to keep them up. Like at least with West Ham, I'm like Jared Bowen can keep you up. That's the thing. But with Wolves and with Leeds, I'm like, okay, maybe Nyonto. Like Nyonto, I think is pretty exciting. But the rest of it, I'm just like, we have seen Leeds annihilate the championship before. I've heard this fucking tune. They come up and they're dog shit and they go back down. I just don't really believe them because, again, you know, the point we always make, they're going to have to come up and play a completely different style. And so I don't really trust Leeds and I certainly don't trust Wolves.
That's my pick. Have we gone for the same picks for all four?
No, because you've got Sunderland.
Oh, no, sorry.
I've got Sunderland staying up and you've got...
Oh, okay.
You've got...
I've got Wolves, Sunderland and Burnley going down.
So you've got Leeds staying up and I've got Sunderland staying up. Yeah, I mean, like that's basically it, isn't it? Like, it's the same selection of teams. So in a way, you can't really be embarrassed here unless a complete interloper comes into this, or unless like Burnley stay up. But like Wolves, man,
they've been circling the drain for a while,
and their signings—they've
done nothing.
Are scary. They made Strand Larsen permanent. Okay, that's fine.
He was there last year. Doesn't improve them.
They brought Fair Lopez. By the way, very funny thing. I looked up Fair Lopez on FB Ref.
Yeah.
And his most similar player is Fermin Lopez. And I was like, okay.
He's got most of the same components.
This is like Kyle Walker Peters situation.
Yeah.
But like John Arias, scary. Like I look at him in Brazil and there's quite a bit of progressive passing and carrying and receiving. Okay. Interesting. But he is 28 next month. Don't love that. And his actual end product in Brazil, he's at like 0.3 expected goals and assists per 90 in Brazil. And you're saying, can you take the Cunha role?
Yeah.
And just keep us in the division? No. Like, no. Like, if it works out, then I don't know if Wolves deserve credit for that or if that's pure luck. But it's going to be a tough fucking ask for them to stay up. And then they got this fullback, like, who's called Wolf, which is ridiculous, or Wolfer. Man. Bad, like he can do some stuff. Like he's a decent passer and carrier, but he was a bad defender in the Eredivisie.
And
Wolves are saying, "Can you actually come and defend in the Premier League?" No, I'm going to call it right now. He cannot. And Strand Larsen, I think, you know, 18 goal involvements last season was an overperformance of his XG, but it was about where he was in Spain. But that's probably his best season. Like realistically, a good season from him is going to be about the same again. You'd thought.
But they're also
it's unlikely to be the same again with no Cunha.
Like, they're not better this season with him because they had him last season.
Yeah, but they did stay up. I mean,
like, No, they stayed up, but they also had the worst XG diff per 90 of all of the teams bar the relegated.
Yeah, I thought Spurs did, but like, borderline. I just look at their squad building this summer and I'm like, what are you guys doing? Are you preparing for relegation? Because that's what it feels like they're doing.
They finished lower and lower progressively for the last four seasons, and it seems like they've just done nothing at all to rectify this just downward spiral that they're going through.
It's a mess.
And I think when I looked at the table, the FBRF table, they were the worst out of the non-relegated teams. Or maybe it was Spurs, but either way, it's not positive. And that's with them massively overperforming in attack and massively underperforming in defence. So like,
yes,
they scored a load more goals than they should have, and also were horrendously in defence, conceding way more goals than they should have. They've also lost Cunha, their biggest threat last year by far.
Mm.
Of the 54 league goals they scored, he scored 15 himself, which is almost 30% of their entire goal output in the league. And his 15 league goals came from just 8.5 XG. So he was also part of the reason why they were so efficient.
He and Larson gave them like 12 goals that they shouldn't have had.
Yeah, and also they were like 40-something percent, maybe more than 40% of their entire output. If you remove Cunha's goals, they had 39 goals from 35 expected goals across the season. Mm-hmm. Which obviously if you remove a player, somebody else will be on the end of certain chances. But Cunha also got 6 assists from 7.5 expected assists. So that tells me that Cunha finished fantastically last season, created pretty well, but is surrounded by poor finishers, has now been removed from the squad and was responsible for close to a third of their goal output. They've not replaced him with anybody. They've also lost like Nouri, who had double figures goal involvements from fullback. Like, they've been edging towards the championship for a while. They stayed up not by much last season. Well, I suppose the three teams that went down being so bad helped them, but they've not improved their squad. They've not added their biggest signing this season was a player they had last year, and they've lost two hugely influential players in terms of goal involvements that they relied on massively last season. But how is this going to work?
Well, the only hope is that like they've got something up their sleeve. Like they've been linked to some interesting players. They were linked to Gesson before he went to Villa. They were linked to Lucas Dassin.
Yeah, but like, they've been linked
to some guys. But it doesn't matter if the first few weeks of the season you just do absolutely nothing. Like you're in fucking trouble. And I look at Adingra, for example, going to Sunderland. Like Adingra is 23. I think he's a good player. He's an interesting player. I think he's been useful in the Premier League. I'm intrigued to see what he can do as a starter. I think he went for like 20 million euros, between 20 and 25 million, something like that. And you're like, could Wolves not just have done like two things like that? Like, do they have literally no money? Because that's the question right now. Because you think if they had 40 mil to rub together, they could have picked up two wingers. Because Gesson didn't go for a lot of money. Adingra didn't go for a lot of money. These are players who would really help Wolves. Like, if you got a couple of players like that, that's going to cost you 50 mil. Okay? Well, they brought in more than that on Cunha alone. So, if they could have gone and done two guys like that, then we'd be pretty interested in Wolves right now. And yet, they've just done absolutely nothing. So, I hope they can go and do something just to make it kind of interesting. But I just think it's going to be a fucking dire watch for them. So Wolves and Burnley, to me, I just wrote them down immediately. And then I was like, the last one, West Ham, I just think have like a good manager and a couple of good players. That should be enough. But then it's Leeds or Sunderland. And I do think Sunderland have like get pumped every week potential.
Yeah, I agree.
But we're all kind of looking at Leeds' performance in the Championship last season and saying, this has got to mean something. And I just don't know if it does, because I don't trust their manager and I don't trust their squad, and they've just signed Calvert-Lewin like on a free. I just think like this is fucking like, okay, so there's the odd signing that I'd really like Nyonto, and then there are guys like Anton Stach who they've picked up in midfield, who's just a good like ball winning midfielder. Great, do some of that. Like, I'm totally fine with that. So if they've just got enough solidity in midfield. Because they've mostly bought, I think, in like 26, 27-year-olds, which feels very much like we just need a few experienced hands to keep us up. Maybe that works. Like, honestly, maybe it works. And I think Leeds is probably the more sensible pick than Sunderland. But for whatever reason, I just want to believe in Sunderland. Well, and also Sunderland used to be a fucking abominable team in the Premier League. They were a disgrace to the division. I hated having them in the Prem. They were crap every year. They had crap managers. They were fucking boring. And I was just like, they've got this enormous stadium full of like banana supporters. They pack it out.
I had no idea what was going to come out of your mouth after that.
Yeah. They pack it out. They pack out the stadium to watch the most fucking dreadful football you've ever seen in your life. I like that they're doing it with like young, exciting players now. Like they've got some players this season who I think will excite them. Like Lefebvre, Adingra, Talbi, Diarra, even Guiyu like is interesting. Obviously Rig, like these kinds of guys, like they're trying to do something fun. So I want to give them credit for that. And I think that, you know, if a couple of the, it only takes a couple of these guys, like if Diarra arrives and he's just sick and Adingra is just sick, then like that might be enough.
I think,
whereas I look at Leeds and I'm like, who's going to be sick here? Daniel James, get the fuck out of here.
I think we'll know quite early on whether Sunderland will be good enough, because they have...
Sure.
Genuinely, they have the fourth easiest first five games. So...
Sure.
I think it's something like West Ham, Burnley, Brentford, Palace, Villa. Fourth easiest opening of the Premier League season. If they're unable to pick up a decent amount of points from them, from games that apparently are the fourth easiest opening, albeit all of those teams are better than them, in my opinion, I just don't see it's going to be a really long season for them. I think after the first six, 7 games, given that they have an easier opening than most, than the vast majority of the league, if they're struggling to put points on the board at that stage, I think it's going to be a really long season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I don't deny it. It's kind of like if you'd come in and said like Liverpool for the title, I'd been like, yeah, fair enough. Like I wouldn't bet on Sunderland to stay up unless you said you have to bet against these teams. Like you have to pick three teams to go down, because then I'm just like prove it, Leeds. That's my attitude. Prove it, Leeds. And it might just come down to like which of these stadiums is more intimidating to go to, and it's probably Elland Road. But like,
I don't know. I reckon it's kind of close.
I don't know. I feel like because the fans are much closer to the pitch at Elland Road than they are at Stadium of Light, it always felt scarier to go to Leeds. And I think for big teams especially, like it feels very
small,
tight. It's like going to Goodison. It's like you don't have any space on the pitch. And that's really hard for big teams. Whereas at the Stadium of Light, I was always like, this is lovely. There's just like loads of grass that you can just like run into, like clip a ball over the top. There's 40 yards like in between the defence and the keeper. But I would like Sunderland to do it. And I think a lot of... it's interesting as well with Sunderland, because I think there's a big delta between the stats guys and the ball knowers, like the online ball knowers, who are like, we know ball, all these players are cool. Like, Sunderland might be interesting. And all the stats guys are like, Sunderland was shit last season, and they're going to be shit again.
I just don't see it. Like, there's so many teams that have come up recently that are better than them and went straight back down. I just don't see how they're different.
Look, those are our picks.
Yeah.
Okay, so we both got Arsenal for the title, which I think we both did last season as well. And you've got Burnley, Wolves, Sunderland to go down, and I've got Burnley, Wolves, Leeds.
Yeah, so our only point of contention is Sunderland versus Leeds.
Yeah, which, you know, one of these teams is probably going to stay up against the odds. One of these teams is going to stay up because the other three are bigger fuck-ups. Like, that's what... Like, I don't think the team that finished 17th will be, like, good. And and it'll be one of those situations where the bottom three are just 10 points adrift. I don't see that happening because, you know, this idea that, like, the three promoted teams will go back down... And it'll be really straightforward. I think that relies on West Ham and Wolves being good. And I do not see Wolves certainly being good. Okay. Shall we go on to the Bird Book? All right. It's Burn Book time. Pete, where do you want to start? In, out, shake it all about.
Let's start with what's going in the burn book.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to start? I can start.
Well, I don't know. I can start. Like, it's up to you, man. Which would be?
I'll start. So what I'm going to put in the burn book this week are social media musicians.
Okay.
I always find like super talented musicians on Instagram. Like they may be singing and playing piano or guitar or maybe doing something a little bit more niche or weird or interesting. And they're generally like really technically good. They are doing covers. They're giving their own interpretation and spin on it, which I love. I used to love things like Live Lounge when radio was still relevant. Boyce Avenue, shout out to them. You know, 15 years ago, pioneering the holy shit, these guys are singing covers and putting it on YouTube.
Crazy.
Cover. But for whatever reason, everybody like fawned over it. And like their covers were, at least at the start, were good. And this is content that I could just literally like endlessly scroll on Instagram, just being like, yeah, I just want to hear a really talented this is the most important point, a really technically gifted musician performing a cover of a really good song with their own interpretation on it. Love that. But the problem is that other people start to like that, and their following grows. More people start to follow them. Their page grows in numbers, and they start to think, well, maybe this isn't just a hobby that I do in my bedroom. Maybe this is like a career. Maybe I can monetize this in some way. And then eventually they quit their day jobs and become quote unquote a recording artist. And then all of these like nice, inventive, cool covers of songs that are already good by good musicians, real recording artists, they're replaced by horrendously bad original music.
Mm.
No more covers, no more posts about that. Just them promoting their own bad songs, trying to become recording artists. And to be fair, if it was songs plural, it would be more palatable. But it's almost always only ever one song that then every time you get served them, it's just them plugging the song in a different way.
Yes.
And it's like a different
version.
It starts
playing in the background. Just
or
like
a different part of the song. And they're all like, hey guys, new song coming out in 2 weeks. Go over to Spotify and pre-save it. And then it like plays a segment from it. And you're like, I've heard this song 40 times now from your last 40 posts.
Yeah.
Each day I'm getting relentlessly served it. The song was bad then. It's still bad now. Like, I respect that you're chasing your dreams, but I came I don't for covers. Because the thing is, like,
I don't know. I don't need to hear covers either. I didn't come. I didn't come to listen at all. especially because I think, like, these people, they've been taught at some point that they should emote when singing, and they always do it in the same way where they, like, close their eyes and do ridiculous, like, hand gestures while they're doing it. And I just want to fucking shoot them in the head with like that cowboat stun gun from No Country for Old Men. It's like,
yeah, it's such a good weapon of choice. But the problem with trying to become a recording artist is that you're generally like, good recording artists don't have to be like the most technically proficient musician in the world.
Sure.
They tend to have something like really unique about them, about their voice, but whatever they maybe
or something to fucking say, like
really
or something
interesting
to say.
Music, like a really approachable, like a really interesting approach to writing music.
It's like Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan is objectively not a good singer, but he's got an interesting voice,
exactly,
and he has something to say. Like these are good things to have.
It's either something like that or a small combination of that, and you're just very very hot. But
yeah, it's okay to be hot. Yeah, that's fine.
All of these things,
but then you need to be crazy hot.
But all of these things are quite difficult, almost impossible to teach. So you kind of either have it or you don't. And if for 99.99% of these guys doing covers in their bedrooms, they don't have it. And we can tell immediately that you don't have it by listening to your first song.
Yeah.
It's a real stay in your lane moment in that like you found a niche that was good and you had a following and the stuff you're doing was good because you're a really good, technically proficient musician. Either you're an amazing tech singer, you're fantastic guitarist, whatever it is, you were able to add something to already good songs. You do not have the ability to make a good song from nothing. And that is the different, that's the difference that has turned you from somebody I want to follow to somebody who I immediately unfollow. As soon as I see that like, I'm now plugging my own music, unfollowed straight away.
And you're like, stay in your lane.
It's such a stay in your lane moment.
You could make money by just like having your music thing, and you still get to like do music, you know, as part of your job. But just you're not going to be remembered as a great recording artist.
Ideas
like,
within your station,
but maybe you don't have that in you. Like this is the thing. I think with music, music's one of those difficult ones though, where in a way I think this is an advantage of learning an orchestral instrument. Because when you learn one, you're like, I can get good. I could, in fact, get really good. And there'll still always be somebody in front of me.
Mm.
You know, like you can work up like to, you know, county level where you're like really fucking good. But then there's always like the National Youth Orchestra or something like that. There are always people ahead of you. And I think that therefore reminds you that you're like, there's a gap between being fucking great.
Yeah, you know, once you go into the professional realms, it's staggering.
Yeah, like it's like you can be great, but you need to have more. And even then, you might be the best technically, but still not have the X factor, which is like stage presence or like expression or whatever it is. You know, like you could be the best technical pianist in the world, but you need to have more than that. Like you kind of need to be hot or you need to do something. And I think that for a lot of people, they're like, well, I've always been the best musician among my friends and I'm a great singer. And I can play the guitar and everybody like loves me. And when I do karaoke, people lose their minds. But what they don't realize is like, there are people doing this all over the world who are hotter than you and are better at songwriting than you, or who just know people because they were on the Disney Channel, you know?
And still struggle to make
it. Like fucking Sabrina Carpenter and Olivia Rodrigo and all these fucking people. Like there aren't that many, there's not that much room.
Yeah.
For you, where you're just like, I come from Reading and I actually think I'm a great singer. It's just like, then you better have like a six pack or like huge tits. Like, honestly, like that, like sometimes I think like that is basically the difference. I think that people look at them and they're like, this guy's really hot. He's got a six pack. Yeah. All these like young men and women want to fuck him. We're going to make him a star. Like
it's
that's literally the
One Direction model. That is literally the One Direction.
Yeah, it's miserable, but that is fucking how it is. Like, let's be honest. Like, we all know this as well with like fitness influencers. You look at fitness influencers, you're like, the most popular fitness influencers are not the ones who like know the most about fitness. They're the ones who make everyone the horniest. Like that is what it is. And if they don't know that about themselves, they need to have a good hard look in the mirror, because they need to recognize that like it's about doing donkey kicks in like tight leggings in front of camera. And similarly, like if you want to be like a superstar and you're playing guitar in your bedroom, you need to fucking know somebody, or you need to have this X factor. And the X factor does need to be like sex appeal or just like undeniable talent.
Or just something alternatively interesting about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but the problem is, most of these people have talent that is extremely deniable. You know.
Well, no, the ones that like are genuinely good musicians. Like, technically, it's just that they have no sauce.
Sure, but you know, that's kind of part of it. Like,
but that's why covers is their perfect realm, because the songs are really good. They're just adding a different interpretation.
Just spend your life doing those shit covers where you're like, what would it be like if Ariana Grande sang an Adele song? You know, I can imagine it, but like, you're about to do it for me, so I'll stay here.
There's
and watch
a random
it.
Band who do a format called Will It Emo, and they just make like really intense emo songs from like normal songs, and it's actually really good.
Every time there's one guy who, every time I see it, I repost it on Instagram, who's the guy who does like kind of metal covers.
Same vibe, yeah.
So they had like Wannabe by the Spice Girls, and they did it in the style of System of a Down.
Yeah, same
and
vibe.
And it is incredible.
Yeah.
But I think he does make a living as a musician, but you've just got to be okay with making a living as a musician and not being a fucking star. Like you can play some local gigs and you can make money from sponsorships, but what you're not going to be is like Chapel Roan, you know? Yeah. Okay, I agree with that. That's a good one. I also think dancing online, get rid of it, stop it. There are now like middle-aged guys who I follow, like middle-aged menswear guys who have a few thousand followers, you know, like 10,000 followers, and they do their fit videos, and now quite often like they start sort of like boogieing away like as they fucking do it, and I'm like, you're like a 50-year-old teacher. This is fucking embarrassing. Like, why do you feel that you need to do this? Like, it's so strange. Just show me your outfit. Turn side, like, give me the front view, give me the side view, maybe give me the back view if you're feeling spicy, and then walk out of frame. That's what I want. I don't want your fucking dancing. Like, it's sad. Okay, anyway, what I'm putting in the burn book, staying up, bullshit. Had a lovely party the other day, was absolutely fucked for like two days afterwards. Got sick on Monday, like, just feeling shit. Like, yeah, staying up late, not for me anymore. Like, okay, I'll do it from time to time. I'm glad I did it for my birthday. But what I really mean is the staying up late that's completely unnecessary and gives you nothing. So when you're like, you're sitting in bed and you think, I don't want to fucking go to bed yet. But you end up just clicking around on your phone or like doing some internet shopping, just dicking around. Like, maybe I'll read my book. Maybe I'll watch something. Fucking who knows. Messing about, and another 45 minutes to an hour passes. And then you go to bed and then you don't sleep. This is bullshit. I do this all the time. And the last couple of days, I've just not done it. The last couple of days, I was like, I know I don't want to read my book. I'm not going to watch a film now. I don't want to sit on my phone for the next 45 minutes. I'm just going to put my phone down and I'm going to fucking go to bed. And I fell asleep at like 10 o'clock the last two nights. And it was amazing. I feel like who knew that the human body functions better on sleep than on no sleep? It's honestly been great. And I think, like, look, once in a while you want to stay up, but sometimes it's really tempting, especially when you've got kids, right? Where you're like, I've worked all day, then I've done like bedtime, bath time. Now I get my time. Now there's a little bit of time for me to relax.
And that starts at like 8:30.
And you don't want it to end. Yeah, because you're like, it starts so late that you're kind of like, well, I want to make the most of it. But then when you end up staying up late, you think, I actually would have been better off just getting the sleep. And so I woke up early this morning and I checked my like Fitbit thing and I'd still had like 7.5 hours and I was like, great. Like, that's really good. 7.5 hours is really good for me. Okay. Like, I can go on and have my day. So I recommend this. If you're the kind of person like me who puts off bedtime, fucks around, doesn't do anything, like, instead say, if there's something I really want to do, then I will do it. If I really want to read my book, really want to watch a film, whatever, I'll do it. But if not, put your phone down and go to bed. And I swear, it's remarkable.
What was the catalyst for this, your birthday? Because I was the third last to leave and I left at 5 past midnight.
I'd slept really badly the two nights before my birthday as well. Like partially bad sleep and partially like staying up. But then like, yeah, honestly, like when I've had a few bad nights, my eyes are like fucked in the day. Like I'm more tired. I need to wear my glasses more. I just, you know, you feel heavy like playing with the kids. On Sunday, I was honestly fucking dying all day with the kids. I was like, I'm so fucking tired. Like I've had like 16 hours sleep in three nights. Like it's just not enough. So yeah, anyway, this is my shout. Like just get some more sleep, everyone. What are you taking out of the burn book?
What I'm taking out of the burn book are Bonnie hitting milestones.
Mm.
Because it's very nice when you see it happen. So I kind of struggled to come up with something this week. A lot of the things that I considered had basically already been done. Creamy pints were considered, upgrading your tech was considered, all of which have already been removed from the burn book. And then literally this morning, we just had some real notable events within like literal minutes of each other.
Oh, really?
And I mean, I'm using notable quite loosely here because it's like, it's notable for us, but like,
yeah, for you.
Realistically, it's like, it's really not that notable.
The listeners aren't going to care. Yeah, sure.
But, yeah, sure. But Bonnie has always been like a little bit behind the curve in terms of like physical growth, physical milestones. Mm-hmm. She's up until like a few weeks ago, she was like a half a percentile in size. She's now up to third percentile in size, but she's a small girl. But equally, like her kind of social development is way beyond most of her peers. Like she's super smarty, she's super chatty. She's really kind of reactive, much more so than all of the other babies in the antenatal class. But
yeah,
equally, they're way more physically developed than her at this stage.
They're just like oafs.
Well, yeah.
They're like dragging their knuckles around like trolls.
But with Bonnie, she doesn't really roll except when you put her on her tummy. She immediately rolls back. So like rolling there is just to get off her tummy. And she won't roll back and forth. Like she'll just get off her stomach and then that's it. Like other babies are like rolling around their playmats, grabbing stuff, going things. When you set her down, she generally just stays there. Has no intention to roll or move really. Didn't really sit up unassisted at all. One thing she did do was had a real like desire just to stand. So whenever you sat her on you, she would just like go really tall and like push her legs out and go really straight, forcing you to kind of lift her up and like kind of plop her on her legs, on her feet. So she would like kind of stand on your lap or on the ground. She loved doing that, but you were holding her. But then this morning, Jess was kind of like set her down and she just started sitting unassisted. And Jess was like, oh, there you go. There's a milestone. Minimal assistance for sitting. And
wow.
Then literally...
That's really early.
5 minutes later, she was holding Jess's fingers, just pulled herself up.
Oh my God.
Within like, so she went from nothing and showing no signs of doing any of this to then sitting pretty much unassisted and now pulling herself up.
Goldie literally couldn't be asked to do this until like 2 months ago.
But like,
I'm not fucking sitting up.
Bonnie's just kind of done this randomly in the last, literally today, within like 5 minutes. And apparently today, all she's been doing is been sitting unassisted and wanting to pull herself up on your fingers and being really chuffed about doing it.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was really nice to see these kind of small milestones. Like obviously like the big milestone here is walking, but these ones just feel, it's like nice to see her progressing as like an actual little like person that isn't just the kind of potato that slept and cried and chat and ate for like the first few months, which to be fair, those are really nice times as well. Like I loved sitting up with her till like 3 a.m. watching Band of Brothers. She slept when she was like 3 weeks old, you know, she was sleeping in my arms. I kind of miss that doesn't exist anymore, but I guess it's just going to be, this is just going to be life now in that you pine for the scenarios and experiences that she has now grown out of, but they've equally been replaced by new stuff that's also great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the realization today, that she's growing up a little bit each day.
Oh, baby Bonnie. So tragic.
Mm.
Yeah, man. Like today, Emma sent me a picture of Coco like trying on her school uniform, and it was I wasn't prepared for it.
Is that next month?
Yeah, it's like two, 3 weeks.
That's soon.
3 weeks, I think.
Does she have her uniform?
Yeah, she has the full thing. So she had like the shoes and the little socks and the little gingham dress and a little cardigan, which she insisted on putting on despite the fact it's like 29 degrees. Yeah, man. It doesn't stop. It keeps going.
Yeah.
That's I like
crazy.
That one. That's a really nice one. Oh, I just want to see Bonnie. I'm really sad. Emma got to see Bonnie this week. I would like to see her too. Mm-hmm. Babies love me. That's my intention. Okay. We need to wrap this one. What's mine? I need to do mine quickly. I'm taking out the burn book. Running. I always liked running. A load of people are just like, oh, I fucking hate running, but I have to do it. I've always liked running. I find running, like, mostly enjoyable. Like, it doesn't mean I'm any good at it. And when I'm doing it, I don't enjoy it. But afterwards, I'm like, oh, that's great.
Mm.
And I was basically like, I need to be doing fitness stuff, but right now I just do not have the time to gym, honestly. Like, it's such a palaver. It's also just more mentally taxing. Like, I will always prefer weightlifting to other forms of exercise, really, except for, like, sport. But some days you're like, it takes me ages. You know, it's like an hour workout. I've got to get there and back, like, blah, blah, blah. I've got to wait for machines and shit. Fuck that.
It's all very codified.
And you've got to fucking, like, you know, keep track of your reps, keep track of your weight, like, do progressive overload, like, all that kind of shit. With running, I literally need to put my shit on and go out. And I was like, I've just got less time. And so I thought, you know what, over the next couple of months, I'm really going to focus on running. And then I thought, right, I need to gamify this. So I got the Runner app where you can, like, set yourself a target, right? So you can say, I want to run further. I want to do a half marathon. I just want to run further generally. Like, I want to improve my 5K. So I was like, right, I'll say I want to improve my 5K. Because right now my 5K is really fucking slow because I basically haven't been running for like 2 years. And my 5K used to be quite a lot faster. Like right now, I did it the other day. It was like 29 minutes. But I used to do it in like 23 and a half, 24. And I was like, okay, well, let's aim to just like get a bit better and keep trying to improve it. So I thought, okay, this is good because it just builds a program for you. I put in my holiday days and it was just like, it recalibrated it and it was like, okay, we'll shift back your test day. How many times can you run a week? And I was like, 3 times. And then it sets that out for you. And like when on Tuesday I was like, I'm feeling a bit shit. I've been feeling unwell the last couple of days. Just skip that workout. It's totally fine. Like it's really good. And then obviously you get audio cues as well. So it's like run at this pace and it says, you know, you're running too fast, you're running too slow, speed up, slow down. That's great. And so, I don't know, I'm in the second week of it only, but it's like an 8-week thing. And then I think at the end of September, I will do a 5K race, not like race with people, but I would try and set a time. And I'm just really enjoying it. And again, the advantage of being a bit older as well is I was like, I'm just going to go and get the equipment. Like I have some Lululemon shorts. They're my best running shorts. Mm. They're really fucking good. Rather than just making do with the shit I've got, I'm just going to buy another pair of these that I love. And I've gone and got proper running socks because my ones were really old. I got a running cap rather than just wearing like a normal cap that doesn't breathe. You know, like I just upgraded all this shit. And that was good because I got to spend some money, which I like to do. And it's honestly kind of great. Like I got excited to do it. I put on my new socks, my new shorts, my new t-shirt, my new hat.
Are those the shorts with like the inbuilt lining?
Yeah. No. I don't like those.
Oh, okay.
Those piss me off. I don't want to do that. But yeah, I just, so I went for a run today. I had to do 7K today at a slow pace. It was like 7K and it was meant to be no faster than 7 minutes per kilometer. So really quite slow.
Yeah.
I actually did go slightly faster than 7K per kilometer because it's
fucking slow.
You get
bored as well.
And it's hard to gauge, you know, I don't fucking know. But anyway, I'm enjoying that. It's also like I did 7K today and I was still done in like 45, 50 minutes. That is nice. And at the end of it, I'm back at my house rather than like 15 minute walk to the gym, hour long workout, 15 minute walk home. So it's an hour and a half like before I even get back to my house. So we'll see how that goes. And at some point I'll try and work in some more weightlifting again. I might just get some better weights at my house, but right now I'm enjoying running. And it's also, you know, my run today, the easiest 7K run I do, I run to Richmond Park and I run around in Richmond Park for like 3K. I'm so close to Richmond Park. I'm like just under 2K from Richmond Park.
It is potentially the best park in London.
It's amazing. And I was just like, I'm running past deer and like parakeets and shit. I was like, this is fucking nuts that this is where I get to run as my local run.
And that it's so close to London as well. And has all that shit in it. It's odd.
It is in London. It's not close to London. It's
no,
in
but
London.
Like so close to central London is what I mean.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Apology accepted. All right. That'll do us for episode one. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to catch our other predictions for the season, then subscribe on the paid side. We haven't actually asked for subscriptions for a while. Actually, we probably did it last time. But please do consider subscribing if you don't. And we really do appreciate you guys. I'm still thinking about fucking with the payment. I just get a bit scared of doing it and then being like, if I put the price down, is everyone going to be pissed off or like people not actually going to sign up and then I get less money and I need money to buy my running gear? Anyway, we appreciate you. We will catch some of you on the paid side. We will catch the rest of you next time. Bye.